Welcome to another episode of the Rugby Buzz, a brand new podcast brought to you by H&HB Events. My name is Mark Hartery, and I'll be your host as I chat to rugby stars past and present about matches that they played in or were involved in that remain highlights for them. Today, I'm delighted to be able to chat to former Wales and British Lions star James Hook. James started his career with Neath in 2004 before joining the Ospreys in 2006. He later enjoyed spells at Perpignan and Gloucester before finishing his career back at the Ospreys. He made his Wales debut in 2006 against Argentina and went on to win 81 caps for his country, scoring 352 points, putting him fourth on the all-time Wales point scoring list. He appeared at three Rugby World Cups and won three Six Nations Championships, including two Grand Slams in 2008 and 2012. He was also a member of the British and Irish Lions squad that toured South Africa in 2009. Following his retirement earlier this year, James is now a coach with the Ospreys and Swansea University, a TV pundit, and a best-selling children's author. Well, hello, James, and welcome to the Rugby Buzz. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Mark. How are you, mate?
Yeah, bearing up. It's a strange old world out there at the moment, isn't it?
It is. Well, we're in lockdown again here in Wales, so it's...
Of course, yes.
So trying to keep the kids occupied when it's hammering down with rain outside isn't easy, mate.
You'll have to get him to read a good book, James, I think. That's the...
I'm sure we can find one, Mark.
you mentioned obviously strange times and lockdown and so on. COVID obviously hit at the end of last season. It was due to be your last season. You were going to go out hopefully with a bang, and COVID kind of stopped all that. That must have been really strange.
Yeah, it was strange and frustrating in a way, I suppose. Yeah. But, you know, obviously COVID's been frustrating for so many people and hit people in so many different ways. So, but, you know, from my point of view, yeah, it was my final season. So, obviously, I'd announced my retirement. But I was obviously hoping to finish off the season with the Ospreys with a few games. I was actually on 149 appearances. So, it'd been nice to hit 150 with the Ospreys. And also, I had my testimonial match lined up for July as well, which... still hoping it'll go ahead, hopefully next summer.
That'd be fantastic, yeah.
If everything sorts itself out. But, frustrating end of the season and my career, really, for me. But like you say, you know, there's people in a lot worse off situations than I am. So, you know, I'm thankful that they had an opportunity to go into a coaching role with the Ospreys and Swansea University, as soon as I finished playing. So, I count myself lucky, really.
Yeah, well, let's hope the testimonial game does go ahead, because I know lots and lots of people were looking forward to that. But yeah. Tell us about the new role, Ospreys and Swansea University. What does that entail?
Yeah, so it's an all under one sort of contract, but it's split in two parts, if you like. So with the Ospreys, basically just a kicking coach and a bit of skills. So with obviously the kickers, and you know, it's not just the 10s and the 15s. It's all the kickers basically throughout the back line. I'm just there if they need any help with their skills. You know, I'll put some sessions together for them. And obviously then the Swansea University stuff is basically, as it sounds really, just coaching the university attack. So again, it's frustrating for those boys because, you know, there's no games at the moment because of COVID. The training sessions are basically really, really limited. You know, they can't do any contact. They can only play, you know, touch rugby towards the end of the session for a certain amount of time. So we've been back in for quite a while now, for a couple of months. But as you can imagine, it's frustrating for those because, you know, they want to get stuck into each other and play a bit of rugby. And there's only so much skills they can do, you know. So hopefully, again, that will change soon and they can get into a bit of contact and get some games, you know, underway soon.
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating right across grassroots rugby, isn't it? That they, they can't play and they're having to reinvent themselves. And I know a couple of the local clubs here in Gloucester have turned to football so that they can play other rugby clubs. They've set up football teams so they can actually play competitive games. But
they get, obviously, I got three boys myself and just trying to keep them occupied, and you know, if they can't do rugby or contact, then obviously they're going to turn to other things. So it's just a shame for rugby in general.
Yeah, definitely. Well, good luck with the new role, and hopefully you'll get back on with certainly with the university to doing the full role with that before too long. Yeah. Those of you that were watching ITV for the French game will have seen James as a pundit on there. Obviously, a disappointing defeat, but it was a warm up game for Wales. So, you know, lots of talk around. Well, it was a warm up, etc., etc. But you know, France are something getting to be something special, aren't they?
Oh, they are. To be fair, they didn't start too well. Wales had a great start. You know, they dropped the kickoff, and then Wales scored pretty much straight after that with a great, really well worked try. But just after that, you know, Wales just couldn't get a foothold into the game. And France, you could see their structure and their pattern starting to take place, and you know, sprinkled with a bit of Stardust, you know, the quality players, you know, Vakatawa, Antoine Dupont and Tamaka halfbacks really controlling things, and Teddy Thomas, so they got that spark. And you know, to be fair, you know, their offloading really impressed me, and the support lines, you know, we used to look at the All Blacks, you know, well, even now, you know, the way they fled through the line support, you know, they were pretty much like that. And yeah, you know, they're getting better every time they play. So, yeah, from a neutral's point of view, it was great to watch France. But yeah, from a Welsh point of view, it was a tough, you know, defeat to take, because, like I say, after that first couple of minutes, Wales were hardly in the game. And obviously, they play Scotland this weekend now, which is not going to be easy, even though it's home anyway, in Parc des Scarlet. You know, Scotland are full of confidence coming down, and, you know, obviously, Stuart Hogg coming back in. They got Finn Russell back in the squad. So, they're going to throw everything at Wales, and they're obviously going to want to finish the Six Nations on a high as well.
Yeah, and you know, Wales have got this one Six Nations game left. Obviously, from their point of view, nothing to play for as far as the Six Nations is concerned. And then into this brand new Autumn Cup. I mean, almost 12 months on from when PVAC took over. You know, how do you see Wales are placed at the moment going into autumn, and what would you be looking for, you know, by the end of the autumn to have seen Wales do?
Well, I think they obviously got to try and win some games. You know, four games out to win now, which is obviously tough for international rugby because it is unforgiving, and you know, you don't get a great deal of time to win over the fans. So you know, you've got to win, and you know, people criticise Gatland for obviously his style of play sometimes, but, you know, he was winning games, so, and that's what people want. So, you know, to be fair to the Welsh coaches, you know, they do need a little bit of time to sort of settle in. They've got these players in the Welsh squad who have been so used to playing and the Gatland style, if you like, for so long. So it's going to take a little bit of time. And obviously a new defence coach as well, Sean Edwards leaving is you know, a big change for those boys as well. So, you know, I think the main thing Wales need to do is start winning some collisions, really getting on the front foot, getting some gain line so they can play, you know, the way we can see that they want to try and play. And I think against France, like I said, you know, they didn't have a great deal of opportunity. Once they did get on the front foot, you could see what Wales, you know, what they can do. So yeah, I think, like I say, Scotland is kind of a must-win game really for Wales, you know, to sort of get that momentum going into that autumn series.
Yeah. Yeah, as you say, hopefully that this period together now will allow the players to you know, just to get used to the systems again and so on. But as you say, that breakdown and the collisions is so key to being able to play in the way that PIVAC wants to play, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, we as have got the players, you know, you can look all over the team for experience. You know, there's 80, 90 cap, 100 cap players in our team who've done it all before. So, and you know, obviously you've got the new caps then of, you know, Louis Samet and Tompkins, these boys who are new into the squad. There's plenty of talent there. But it just needs to all come together. And I think once they start winning, you know, the odd game, you know, that confidence will build and then, you know, they'll move forward, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. And looking forward to what should be a really exciting autumn cup. James, you've picked a couple of clashes with England as your favourite games. They were actually back to back Six Nations games. I think the last game in 2007, yeah. The first game in 2008. Two different sets of coaches, which we'll go into. And if we start with the 2007 game, 17th of March, last game of the Six Nations. I think Wales had lost all the previous games, and then they, you know, they're home against England. the, you know, you're 21 years of age. I think it was your 11th cap. You're switched to fly half because Stephen Jones is out, having and played most of the campaign at inside centre. Can you remember anything about that? The build up to that, having lost the four games and then having to take on England.
Yeah, I remember it. A lot, to be honest with you. I think the week before the England game, so I'd been playing 12 throughout the whole campaign, and the week before, or the match before, we'd lost Twitley out there, which was a big loss for us. You know, there was a bit of controversy with that game as well, because if anyone's remembers it, we had been told it's time to go for the kick to the corner, so we kicked to the corner, and then the referee blew up. So which meant we lost the game. You know, we felt we could have scored from the driving maul, or, you know, and obviously won the game. But that one to be, so obviously put pressure on us then going into the last game, where, you know, if we had lost, like you say, we'd have had the wooden spoon. So it was a massive game, and Stephen Jones was injured. Like I say, I've been playing 12 throughout the whole of the campaign, so it was my real chance to play in my favourite position, to be honest, at fly half. I'd had a couple of appearances for Wales before there, come off the bench, you know, against Australia, started against Canada, and, you know, this was the biggest test for me at fly half. And the build-up was, I was just really, really excited. I think I'd almost waited this opportunity for so long. I'd almost sort of played the game over in my head a million times, you know, so I had a feeling of I knew how I wanted it to pan out, and it almost panned out perfectly just as I wanted. And we just started. We were fantastic from start to finish. I scored an early try from a charge down from Toby Flood's kick. And we just didn't look back from there. And, you know, for me personally, I had a full house, which is obviously a try, conversion, penalty and drop goal in the game. And like I say, I just remember Wales being totally dominant against a really, really good England team. And the roof was closed in the Millennium Stadium. And at the end, I just remember, even though we beat England, we didn't win anything in the Six Nations as far as that was concerned. But as a Welsh fan, we'd beaten England, and the crowd were bonkers after. You know, nobody wanted to leave the stadium. They were singing, shouting. And like I say, the roof was shut, so the atmosphere was crazy. And I just remember not wanting to walk off the pitch back into the change room because I was enjoying it so much. So that was why, you know, I picked that one as one of my favourite games.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the roof being closed. I've been to many matches there when the roof's been closed, and the atmosphere, as you say, is just absolutely electric. What's it like to play in that?
Oh, it is really hard to explain, because you'll never replicate that feeling in anything, I don't think. When you're singing the anthems, particularly the Welsh anthem, is a really strong, you know, emotional anthem, really. So once, you know, the 74,000 fans are singing that behind you, and just on the pitch, you know, I'm trying to explain, like, you know, you can't hear each other speak, so, you know, you're relying on hand signals quite a lot. And, you know, if you want to speak to someone, you've got to get up really close to them, because the noise is so electric and loud. So really difficult to explain. And like I say, when you win the big games against England, for example, there, what an amazing feeling. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you described, a couple of minutes in, you know, whatever you'd thought about in terms of your dream game, 2 minutes in and you charge down Toby Flood's kick and go over. Probably the only difference would have been that try would have come from 50 yards and you beat a few more people. But exactly. Again, what a dream start. You couldn't have believed it, really.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's what he wants as well, not just as a fly half, but any player. You know, you want to get a couple of early positive touches to give you that confidence to get into the game. And, you know, there's all sorts of nervousness, you know, flying about the whole squad before big games like that. So to get a few good early touches just gives you that confidence, and you immediately settle into the game, and you can almost relax a little bit and just play the way you know you can. So, it's a great start there.
Yeah, and I think not long after, I think he could have extended the lead, having looked back at the game. I think Shane had gone through, and there was an overlap which he ignored, and then got held up short of the line. So that, you know, that could have you know, that could have added to it. But then Chris Horsman scored. I think Gethin was rampaging through, held it again short of the line, and yeah, Chris Horsman just dived over. So, as you say, into the first half, 15-0 up. But England did hit back, didn't they? They did, you know, they did come back. I think Harry Ellis scored.
Yeah.
Mike Catt went through the centre and kicked ahead, and it bounced well for him. And then we had a typical Jason Robinson score,
yeah,
you know, out wide. So half time after the great start, it was 18-15 to Wales. So, yeah, you know, it was still all in the balance. And given the previous Six Nations games, was it a nervous dressing room at halftime?
Not really. You know, from what I can remember, I think, like you say, we built such a lead. I think it was all, you know, the chat was right. We got to keep playing and try and not protect the lead, but, you know, just keep going out and play the way we are. And like I mentioned at the start, it was a quality England team, so they were obviously going to have their say at some point of the game, and they did that right after halftime. And they brought it back to, I think it was 18-15, like you say. And it was a case of us then just sort of holding our nerve and, you know, and showing our control, if you like. And we managed to sort of wrestle our way back, you know, in terms of the momentum of the game. And I think in the second half is when, you know, it kicked the drop goal and a couple of penalties, which gave us that bit of breathing space. But like you say, England, you know, for me, at such a young age as well, to play against players like Jason Robinson, like you mentioned, these boys who I'd watched win the World Cup for England, you know, a few years before, and even though I was a Welsh fan, you know, they are heroes, you know, and it was nice to play against them and obviously beat them as well.
Yeah, yeah. The second half, as you say, for somebody so young, you really pulled the strings, didn't you? And as you say, a couple of penalties and that drop goal to give you the full house. And although, you know, England did try and come back, they weren't, you know, you kept them at bay, didn't you? You kept them at arm's length. And in the end, it was, dare I say it, quite a comfortable victory, in as much that you weren't under huge pressure. You just kept the scoreboard ticking along. I think there was the final one was a bit of a long range special from you anyway to kick it over. But again, that must have been a great feeling.
Yeah, it was. And I remember so defence, you know, held pretty strong. You know, they did score some quality tries, England, with the talent they got. You know, like you mentioned, Harry Ellis, Jason Robinson, Mike Catt, these boys, quality players, so they're going to cause teams problems. But I think I just remember, again, the atmosphere in the stadium, you know, the crowd were just, you could tell they were right behind us and really willing us on to win the game. And us as players, having experienced the Six Nations prior that we had, we just wanted to go out there and put a performance in and win the game. And even though, you know, it was fairly tight in the end, I didn't feel like throughout the game at all that we were going to lose it.
Mm. Yeah, which again, playing at home against England must be a nice feeling. Yeah. And of course, to cap it all, you win man of the match as well.
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah, the bottle of champagne at the end of it, and still at my grandparents' house actually.
Lovely.
Which would say love, but and again, just special moments, obviously for myself, but you know, my family just being there, you know, like I mentioned, my grandparents and my parents, and you know, obviously didn't have my kids then, it's too young, but just having those there to support me, having known, you know, what they've been through with me, you know, through my junior rugby, supporting me through all of that, taking me, you know, to the back of beyond and rainy days like today. You know, it makes it all worthwhile when, you know, you go into the family room and see them after then.
Yeah, lovely. And again, what rugby's all about, isn't it? To be able to give back to the family. So 2007, you avoid the wooden spoon. You beat England in the final game. The next Six Nations game, as alluded to earlier, was up at Twickenham. You know, Wales hadn't won there, I think, for 20 years. In between those two Six Nations games, of course, we'd had the disastrous World Cup of 2007. Gareth Jenkins losing his job. So not only was it the first game of the Six Nations, but it was a brand new coaching setup. Warren Gatland's first game. We'll go on to the team he selected in a sec, but from a player's perspective. Gareth Jenkins was coach, and then Gatlin comes in. What were the immediate changes that Gats made?
He probably just simplified a lot of things. You know, we knew we had some quality players in the team. Mm. But he came in with, and just, he didn't know a great deal about the players. I think he's come out and sort of admitted that. So he just sort of, you know, hence the reason why he picked the squad he did against England. The Ospreys were playing so well at the time. He just basically said, right, you know, we'll pick the boys who I think are on form at the moment, see where we go from there. And he just basically, everyone knows Gatland's game plan is very, very straightforward. You know, get your big runners into the game, get around the corner, play to one sort of 15-metre channel, and then, you know, play off nine inside the 15s, and then play off 10 play off nine outside the 15s and play off 10 inside the 15-metre lines. And, you know, for myself as a 10 and you know, halfbacks and scrum halves as well, it's just a simple game plan, and everybody knew what they needed to do. Their roles were very, very clear. And obviously our defensive coach, Sean Edwards, who everybody knows, very simple. You know, he scared the life out of everybody, but everybody knew what they needed to do and what their roles were. So I think that was the key thing. And I think that's just what we needed. Like you mentioned, Mark, you know, we got knocked out of the World Cup, which was devastating, you know, for us. You know, we didn't expect to lose to Fiji, even though they really deserved a win. It was a tough time for us, so we needed something just to get us back on track, and it was a perfect way.
I mean, you touched on Sean Edwards there and how scary he is. I mean, he was a huge influence with the Welsh squad, obviously with the Welsh defence over the last, you know, 10 or 12 years. Do you think he's the missing link as far as France are concerned?
Oh, 100%. You wouldn't think one man could make a hell of a difference, but I think just the way he is, his personal, obviously he's a very good defensive coach. Mm. And what he tells you, you know, again, is very simple. It doesn't give you too many things to think about, two or three points going into a game. But if you don't, execute those points, then, you know, you sort of feel the wrath of him. But, you know, he's very clear on what he wants. I don't think, you know, because of his personality, he is such a great coach. I don't think somebody else trying to coach his methods, it wouldn't work, because, you know, they haven't got the same personality as him. So I think the French would have had a bit of a wake-up call when he first arrived, but it's definitely what they needed. And I don't think it's just the defensive element of, you know, coming off the line, making their tackles. It's that closing up the game, which I think France need, you know, from a half-back's point of view, for example, Dupont and Tomac, very young half-backs. Someone like Sean Edwards will get, you know, he'll sit them down, he'll put them in scenarios in the training pitch, you know, last couple of minutes, you know, we're stuck on the halfway line, we're 2 points in front. What you do here, you know what I mean? And, you know, he constantly put you under, you know, stress and positions where, you know, you need to get out of. And I think they'll learn a hell of a lot from having Sean. And he's definitely a key factor in why France are doing so well, obviously along with the quality players they got as well, which helps.
Yeah, and yeah, Wales were hugely lucky to have him for as long as they did. And I think, probably underrated, I suppose, in many respects. I think people take it for granted.
Yeah.
Gatland's first game, as you alluded to, picked 13 of the Ospreys side. I think it was only Mark Jones and Martin Williams that were in the starting lineup that weren't at the Ospreys. And as you said, that was crucial, wasn't it? In terms, you know, the Ospreys were playing so well at the time, and that presumably made it a little bit easier in terms of going out there?
Oh, yeah, for me personally, and probably the other Osprey boys, because, you know, we've been playing with each other and training with each other week in, week out. And, you know, for the first game against England, he didn't actually change too much in terms of the way the Ospreys played either. You know, okay. He sort of got his stamp on the game sort of gradually, you know, and like I say, he didn't want to change too much because, you know, he probably wanted to feel the players out a little bit. But like you say, yeah, the Ospreys, we won the league, I think it was the year before. So, you know, we were full of confidence, full of quality. And that was the reason he picked the sort of 13 Ospreys. And like I say, you know, nobody really, even though we had new coaches, a new sort of look team, nobody really gave us much of a hope going to Twickenham. We hadn't won a game there for 20 years. And obviously England, again, had a quality outfit there, full of, you know, super, superstars, really. So, and first half didn't go away at all. who got stuffed pretty much in every way first half. So, you know, coming in at half time, it was like, you know, how on earth are we going to come back from this? And somehow I still don't know how we did, to be honest with you, but we did, Mark.
Well, it was one of the great comebacks, wasn't it? In terms of Six Nations rugby, and as you say, you know, we forget sometimes that, you know, that England side that you were playing, they'd reached the World Cup final in 2007. Mm. So, you know, albeit after a big loss to South Africa in the first game, but you know, they still reached the final. So, you know, England rugby again was on a little bit of a high. And as again, the first half just wasn't a good one, was it? I think Vanacolo had come on as a replacement for Strettle and managed to tap down a cross kick to Toby Flood. And I think there were a couple of other moments looking back at the game. I think Paul Sackey and David Strettle himself could have and perhaps should have scored in that first half. But if not for fantastic defence from Wales, I think Hugh Bennett in particular on Paul Sackey. But it was, you know, you'd scored a couple of penalties, but 19-6 at half time. What was that dressing room chat like? Is this damage limitation or can we still do this?
Definitely belief we could still do it. It was just how, really, because like you say, we weren't really in the game. And to be fair, England probably helped us get back in the game the way they played. You know, we were a completely different team coming out in the second half, and so were they. They just sort of capitulated a little bit, and they were making errors that, you know, you don't see from big players. But that half time, you know, that scoreline was key. You know, even though we were 19-6 down, right on half time, you know, we held Paul Sackey up, and you know, it could have quite easily been 26-6, and you know, it was a long way back then. But then, like I say, yeah, second half we came out, we kicked a couple of penalties, got back in the game. Lee Byrne scored, which leveled the score, and then you know, that's the sort of start of their sort of downfall, really. That second half, they kicked off again straight after the try. Mike Phillips kicked the downfield. Bolshaw then had his kick charged down by Mike Phillips, and we ended up going over, and before we knew it, we were in the lead from nowhere, really. But yeah, and it was just a case again then of holding on to that lead. The last 10 minutes were, you know, I wouldn't say it was nervous. You know, it was perhaps a little bit nervous, but I think we did feel sort of in control. England didn't really threaten us in our half for our last 10 minutes. We'd sort of keep the ball and keep England pinned down in their half, and that's what we did. And a great result. And I think because there was no expectation on us, and you know what had happened the previous year, to come away with such a historic victory there was massive. And then obviously then that led to us winning the Grand Slam, which is an incredible turnaround if you look, you know, sort of 6 months before.
Yeah, as you say, the expectations were pretty much rock bottom. Even though, you know, it's a new coaching setup and so on, and then half time, it's almost that you can come out without any pressure. People don't expect you to come back, and as you say, you knock over a couple of penalties, and then I think it was your break then that led to Lee Byrne's try. Mm. You kick the conversion, and as you say, suddenly you're level. Yeah. And it's like, wow, yeah. where did that come from? And England looked rattled, didn't they?
They were very rattled, and I think they probably thought as well, you know, half time is just done and dusted. You know, like I said, you scored just before half time, which could have put them, you know, 26-6 up, and they probably thought, you know, our next try will be coming pretty soon, and they'll go on and win the game comfortably. And it looked like that from an English point of view, and they probably admit it now, you know. But yeah, you're probably right there, Mark. You know, we went out there and thought, you know, we 19-6 down. Let's just go out and throw it about. And, you know, we did. We did that. And it was a great victory. And again, you know, the family were up there after and celebrating, and they couldn't quite believe it either. So completely different atmosphere as well to the Millennium Stadium. You know, there was, you know, sort of a feeling of shock, really, in the crowd from the English fans. You know, basically couldn't believe what was going on. And you could certainly hear the Welsh fans for the last 20 minutes of that game, let me tell you.
I mean, you know, you know, the general fans don't really get to hear about it. Was there anything in particular said at halftime? It was you know, first match for the new coaching setup. You mentioned Sean Edwards and Gatland. Was there any particular message? I mean, what are those guys like in that situation?
Really, really calm, actually. You know, it wasn't a massive rollicking. I think if I remember rightly, it was basically we had to keep hold of the ball. We couldn't keep any sort of run of possession going in our first half. You know, we couldn't go through any phases. And like you say, we had a couple of penalties in the first half and that was it. England had so much of the possession. So just said, when we had the ball, we just need to keep hold of it and go through some phases. And to be fair, that's what we did in the second half. And obviously we came away with a couple of tries and obviously some penalties. And yeah, it was probably the all-time smash and grab.
Yeah, you know, the try that won it was typical Mike Phillips, wasn't it? It, you know, charged down from Bolshaw. I think Martin Williams recycled it and put Filsey in and again a typical Filsey dive in the corner, not taunting the opposition at all as he went over, and then of course you slot the conversion. I think. 20 unanswered points in 13 minutes, which, as you say, is the ultimate smash and grab.
Yeah, it was. And like I say, they couldn't quite believe it, England. But yeah, I think, you know, you look at the big players then, like Mike Phillips, you know, your Lee Burn, Gavin Henson, you know, made a great break prior to, I think it was, no, it was just after Mike Phillips' try, I think, if I remember rightly. But, you know, the big players then started to step up. And yeah, England didn't really have an answer. So, yeah, I think, you know, obviously that, you know, momentum in the Six Nations is massive. So to get that first win away from home, you know, you're going to the next game to play against Scotland at home. We just couldn't see us losing, and obviously we didn't, and we went on to win the Grand Slam, which was incredible feeling.
And on that point, you know, you'd had the huge disappointments of the World Cup to end up as Grand Slam champions in 2008. What was that like as a player?
Yeah, I think, you know, as I mentioned just now, we won the league title, my first league title with the Ospreys the year before, 2007. Just before that, you know, I'd won two league titles with Neath, you know, my semi-professional team, and then obviously the Grand Slam 2008. So it was winning, you know, at the early part of my career, just seemed to come, you know, it was almost like, oh, this is what it's all about. You know, we just win trophies every year and that's that, like, you know. It wasn't until probably the end of my career, you know, the second half, where, you know, you realise it's just really difficult to win trophies, and you almost sort of take it for granted if you've had it, you know, sort of, or so much so early in your career. So, you know, I look back with really, really fond memories, and yeah, I think not you didn't take winning trophies for granted, but I think because we had that experience so early on, I had that experience so early in my career, it was sort of nothing new. That's just what happened, like, you know.
Yeah, and to win at Twickenham for the first time in 20 years, it was first game of Six Nations, as you say. Was there much of a celebration after, or was it, you know, as you say, you had Scotland coming up, or was it just
straight back on the bus to the Vale Hotel? Obviously, you had a good few beers. We played Scotland the week after, had a good few drinks on the bus, and none of the boys went out at all. We were told to stay in the hotel. So we stayed in the hotel. There was, like, you know, a couple of functions going on. So the boys just hang about, you know, the bar in the hotel. And yeah, we enjoyed ourselves, put it that way. But yeah, we were back to business on Monday and looked forward to the Scotland game. But I think that was a good thing about our squad. You know, even though we had some really good victories, we all celebrated, you know, together, made sure we had a few drinks, and then turned up Monday morning, trained our socks off and prepared for the next game. And, you know, it was a really, really enjoyable sort of 6 to 8 weeks, you know, Six Nations campaign. That was something I'll always look back on with fondness.
Yeah, well, two cracking games there. You picked them, as I say, for any Welsh fans, two back to back victories over England will certainly tick the box. So it's been great to look back at those. Now, away from rugby a little bit. I'm talking to James Hook, the best-selling children's author. how did the book come about?
Well, actually, Mark, it was when I was in Gloucester. my eldest boy Harrison. He went to Hainham comprehensive primary school. Sorry,
yeah.
He's starting comprehensive next year. And yeah, there's a book fair after school, and he wanted a book naturally. So he wanted a rugby book as well. So I said we'd go in, we'll pick one up, no problem. But there was a lot of football stories for children. The only rugby stories there or books were factual books or history of Six Nations or World Cups, and there was nothing there that really tickled his fancy. So I said, "Oh, we'll get one online, you know, no problem." There was nothing of the sort there. Couldn't find anything for him. So I was like, you know, this is crazy. Obviously, rugby a massive sport, and yeah, particularly from Wales, you know, it just got me thinking a little bit. But that was during my final year in Gloucester. I didn't actually know anything about it. I wrote a few ideas down at the time, but just sort of, you know, it went off my mind, and that was that. But it wasn't until I came back to Swansea and I re-signed in the Ospreys, Harrison had mentioned something again, and I thought, you know, I got to do something about this because it's going to annoy me if someone else sort of picks it up and yeah, I'm like, treating, you know, I was thinking about that. So I got in touch with Mal Pope, who was a BBC sort of radio presenter and a family friend. And I knew he'd know somebody to sort of point me in the right direction. And I said, "Mal, you know, this is my, you know, I'm thinking idea. Can you put me in touch with a children's author?" And he put me in touch with Dave Braley, my co-author now. And I think I rang Mal on the Tuesday, and we met, the three of us met on the Thursday. And then the following week, we started writing. You know, Dave, you know, was obviously fully behind it and loved the idea. And yeah, we just got writing. And then, yeah, once we finished the book, the main thing was trying to get a publisher and to back it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, was the waiting game for us, really, because we knew we had a good story there. But it was about someone, you know, helping us out and backing it. And then, obviously, Polaris Publishing from Scotland, you know, they loved it. Pete Burns, who's the publisher, loved it. And he gave us a contract and a two-book deal. So, yeah, it's great that actually, you know, when it came out 1st of October, the first book, and to actually have that in your hands and from an idea from nothing really to sort of come to fruition was a really nice feeling.
Yeah, and as you say, you know, for it to take that length of time, what was it, you touched on it, what was it like to open that package when that first book came through? It must have been unbelievable.
It was because Dave, my co-author, we're right with, he had told me about this before. You know, he's like, you know, all this work and things, you know, once you actually get that copy in your hand, it's a great feeling. And he was right. He was right. And it was a summer's day. Well, it was sunny anyway. And Dave came up and actually the author, sorry, the publisher sent me the copy and sent Dave a separate copy,
yeah,
two copies. But I didn't receive mine. I received it like a day later than Dave. Dave thought that, you know, the two copies were, you know, one for me, one for him. But so he, in fairness to Dave, he drove at my house and gave me a copy. And in the time he drove up to the house, mine arrived. So it was just, you know, it was great actually that I could share, you know, the same day, you know, we both had our copies. And like I say, it was an amazing feeling. And like I say, all the hard work we've put in to actually come out into a book and to get people, you know, the reason we wanted to write as well is to get sort of children reading and, you know, children do struggle to sort of engage and want to read books. So to be able to do that through sport and rugby in our case is really nice. And we've been sent like, you know, photographs from parents of the kids, you know, going off to sleep, reading the book and things. So that's really nice.
Brilliant. You know, You're playing up in Gloucester and could you ever have imagined that, you know, you would be a co-author of a book that I think is number one on the Amazon sports fiction for young adults?
Yeah,
could you ever have imagined that?
No, not at all. I'm like, you know, I never grew up wanting to be, you know, an author or anything like that. I used to, you know, I enjoyed writing stories and letting my imagination run a bit wild, but Never thought that, but yeah, it just shows, you know, I think if, you know, if there's something there, there's a little idea in someone's head, then just go with it. And what's the worst that can happen? It doesn't come off. Just, you know, just go and have a crack at it, and you never know.
Yeah. So the main character in the book, I think Jimmy Joseph, where did he come from? Is he based on anybody? Is it just an amalgam of people you knew growing up and that sort of thing?
No, it's a fictional story, a fictional book, but Jimmy Joseph is based on myself. There's a lot of fictional elements to Jimmy and the rest of the story, but there's a lot of, for example, Jimmy is an asthmatic. He's very short-sighted, wears glasses. He's an extremely talented rugby player. Doesn't all go his own way for various reasons in the book. And that's basically, a lot of what's based around myself as well. I'm asthmatic. I'm short-sighted, wore glasses from the age of 9 years old. My favourite snack was salad cream on toast. That was Jimmy's favourite snack. So, there's a lot of things in there. I mentioned my grandparents earlier on, so they feature heavily in the book, and I wanted those to feature heavily because, the amount they supported me along with my parents and the rest of my family. So all that is relevant to myself. And like I say, it is a fictional book, but, you can pick up a lot that's associated to me as well. And to Dave, for example, with Dave, we got a character, Jimmy's friend, Kitty. Manu and Kitty are Jimmy's friends in the book. So Kitty plays in the rugby team, an all-boys rugby team, and Dave's daughter, Olivia, played in an all-boys football team. So, we want to sort of get that point across as well and, realise, it's a game for male and females. So, that was an important point we wanted to get across also.
Yeah, and more importantly, what does Harrison think of it?
He loves it. He loves it. He does, and... myself and Kim have been reading him a chapter, not just him, my other two boys, Oliver and Ollie and George, reading him a chapter every night. So, they enjoy it, particularly Harrison. He's 10, so Ollie and George are 5 and 3. So you can imagine they lose concentration pretty quickly. So it takes a bit more on the book to keep them interested. But, it's great. And, hopefully they'll pick up reading off the back of it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned you got a two-book deal. So is book two underway?
Yeah, book two is finished as far as we are concerned, myself and Dave. Got to edit. So the first book was supposed to be out June the 4th, and then the second book was supposed to be out just before Christmas, but obviously with everything going on, everything got a bit delayed. So book one is obviously out now. It was out October the 1st, and the second book will be out in the new year. Hopefully, we have aspirations to write a few more as well and get a series of them going. So I think it all depends how people sort of enjoy them. But the feedback we've had, in the short time it's been out has been really, really positive. So hopefully that'll continue.
Yeah, no, as you say, the feedback, lots and lots of stuff that I've seen. I loved looking at the Amazon listing yesterday for the book, and I think you've got some comments from Sam and Shane and Tommy Bowe and Philzy, yeah, and so on. Yeah, it's fab how that whole rugby community just gets behind one of their own, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's brilliant. And that is rugby for you, isn't it? It's not just obviously in this scenario, but everything, in highs and lows. The rugby community is a great community. So, and that's one of the reasons. It's great to get kids involved in a young age, playing rugby or football or some sort of sport. Like I mentioned, my three boys, I'll always encourage them to get involved in team sports because, that's what sort of makes you as a person in a way as well.
Yeah, definitely. And the more they can experience, the better. So, just a shameless plug for the book. If people want to get hold of the book, how do they do that? Presumably, all good bookstores is that the traditional line?
Yeah, that's it, Mark. I think all you could say all sort of local bookstores, W.H. Smith as well, Waterstones, on Amazon obviously. And Polaris Publishing as well. You can get the, I think they should have some signed copies left. I'm not sure if they got it there, but they obviously sell it as well. So I'm sure myself and Dave will. We'll sign some more copies, in the near future as well, and certainly for book two as well.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. And I think it's available on Kindle as well, isn't it? People want to download it in the newfangled way. But I think it's brilliant, James. Known you for a good few years, and you know, to see that book come out, and the pleasure on your face in some of the photos with you holding the book is just so brilliant to see. So wish you every success with that. And next time Heinem have a book fair, no doubt your book will be pride of place.
Yeah, I hope so. Funny enough, actually, I was obviously I'm living in Mumbles in Swansea, and this was about a month or two ago now. Mr. Dean, who's the headmaster in Heinem, he must have been down on a holiday or something here for the weekend, and I passed him in the car, so I said that I'll have to pop up and get some books to the school and pop up when I get a chance. So it'd be great to see everyone there as well.
Yeah, that would be lovely, and I'm sure we'd go down a storm with the school, particularly as that's kind of where the idea came from, which is brilliant.
Definitely, I'll go back and watch some Gloucester games as well, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to have a pint.
Definitely, 100%.
Have to have a pint, James. As always, fascinating to talk to you. The two games that you picked were brilliant to reminisce about, especially in different reasons for different reasons. So that's been brilliant. But also just chatting through your new life after professional rugby as well. And I wish you all the very best with that, James. It's been an absolute pleasure as always, and hope to speak to you again soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me, Mark. Appreciate that.
Okay. Cheers, James.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Rugby Buzz. With Christmas fast approaching, you can now get your hands on some of our amazing collection of memorabilia by visiting our new website store at www.hnhb.buzz. New items are being added all the time, so why not have a look? You can choose to have the print only or have it framed in either our standard or deluxe offerings. It's entirely up to you. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time. But for now, be safe.